Welcome. My name's Adrian Beebe, and this is the fourth in the series of podcasts about the village of Kington Langley in North Wiltshire. Now, that's actually something of a misnomer because in this episode, we're taking a walk around a mile north of Kington Langley to the hamlet of Draycott Cern. Population 104, roughly half living in the hamlet itself, half in properties scattered around it. Today, this small community is part of Sutton Benger Parish. When residents vote, they vote in Kington Langley Village Hall. But it wasn't always this way. Until 1934, Draycott was a parish in its own right. Why, you might ask? Why did such a small hamlet have such status? Because of the once wealthy and powerful Draycott estate, echoes of which still shape this part of Wiltshire, even today. You're listening to Memories of Kington Langley.
Episode 4, Draycott Cern and the Draycott Estate.
In this episode, I'm going to be talking to two long-time residents of Draycott Cern, Reuben Cousins and his wife, Geraldine. Let me introduce them. Reuben Cousins is 83 years old. He was born in 1936 in the house called simply 12 Draycott Cern. No street names here. He's moved home once in his life, to number 9, Draycott Cern, where I'm going to meet him. Geraldine was born just outside Bath in 1946. She moved with her family to Draycott Cern in 1961. They married in 1964 and bought number 9, Draycott Cern, as their home. It takes me a little while to find their house. Even though Draycott Cern is a small hamlet clustered around a T-shaped junction, I manage to knock on the wrong door, and then have to ask a gentleman for directions. Number 9 is tucked out of sight right at the end of the lane, close to the footpath to the old byway track to Kington Langley, the track people used before the road was built.
He's the oldest person.
Reuben and Geraldine invite me into their neat dining room, where Reuben reveals he has something in common with the world's best known performers.
I know everyone in Draycott by name, and all of them knows me by my first name. And a lot of them don't know my second name, but they all know me by my first name. And if you ask, if you go to any village and say you've been talking to Reuben, they'll laugh red off, because they know who you've been talking to.
Like Prince, Madonna and Elvis, Reuben is a man known by his first name. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. I begin by asking Reuben about his earliest memories of Draycott Cern.
Father worked in Westonhouse and mother was basically housewife. She lived with her aunt. Now her aunt was washerwoman for the big house.
So the big house is Draycott House, principal residence of the Draycott Estate. More about that later.
She had a big oval bath rather than the bath you wash yourself in. She had a big oval bath that she washed the sheets and whatever. That was her livelihood. And she brought up my mother.
And she lived where, your aunt?
Number 12.
She's also number 12. So they're yes. All in number. So
yes, mother, father, and great aunt was in number 12 where I was born.
School for Reuben was local.
Children from Draycott Cern, 90% of them went to school at Sutton Bender, including me, walk there. And the school is still there. It was built by Lord Cowley for the children of his tenants. The headmistress was the daughter of the landlady of the, what is now the Flambe, but was...
The Vintage.
The Vintage.
Notice how the Draycott estate pops up again there. As my chat with Reuben continues, it's a recurring motif. The influence of these large rural estates isn't something I've thought about. If you listened to episode 3 of this podcast, you might recall that, at one time, the Draycott estate owned Fitzurse's farm in Kington Langley, the medieval manor built on the hillside near Parker's Lane, which was demolished in the early 1900s. Most of Kington Langley was owned by another estate, the Langley estate. Back to Reuben. He tells me how vividly he remembers the arrival of electricity in Draycott Cern.
So, can you remember the electricity arriving here when it came?
1948.
What was that like when you got electricity?
You were allowed, obviously you were allowed the box. That was to do with it. You were allowed one plug and one light in the front room. And if you wanted anything else, you had to pay for it. And that was your lot.
Transport in those days wasn't what it is today.
How did people get about? Because clearly no one had cars at this point.
90% bicycles. And during the war, I still got the lamp. And during the war, they had to be half blacked out. You had to ride with the front is half blacked out, so you could just about see the front wheel. Of course, there weren't many cars. And that was an acetylene lamp. I think the gas produced by carbide was little stones, and the water was in a container in the lamp and dripped onto the stone, provided gas to light the light. And I think the gas was actually cyanide.
Christmas, of course, was a special time, made more special for the children of Draycott Cern by an annual invitation, Geraldine tells me.
When his mother was a child, every Christmas, all the children in the village would be invited to Draycott House, and the girls were given a scarlet cape with a hood, and the boys were all given a suit of clothes.
And an orange.
And an orange, yes, and which was a great treat.
All the children invited to Draycott House. There it is again. The great house and the estate seemed to touch every aspect of the lives of the Draycott Cern residents. And to a very large extent it did. Most people in Draycott Cern were employed by the estate.
So just take you back to your childhood again. What are your memories, the people living here, did they all work for the estate?
Yes. We had Fred Brind, who was the outside carpenter. He would be responsible for gateposts and posts and rails. We had a man living in Draycott as Fred Robbins. He would be the inside carpenter, which would, if a door stuck or a window done, you know, whatever.
So that you had carpenters? Were there people working on the land, farmers?
Or... Yes, farms.
That was before 1920.
That was before 1920, mum. Mm-hmm. Then Scotland Lodge was, they reared pheasants there to be used on the estate. There's a keeper's cottage right in the middle of the park, which is still there, which would have the dogs to train them up to pick up the birds. So there again, you had a deer park, and that was butchered in Sutton Bender.
The villagers even lived in houses built and owned by the estate. Reuben tells me how you can spot these properties.
One, two, I think there's four pairs in Sutton Bender. on the main road, on the left-hand side of the main road going through, is exactly the same. Crown crest. All the lodges got a crest on and a date. There's four lodges. Front Lodge, Slates Lodge, Hunter's Lodge and Scotland Lodge. And I think possibly Scotland Lodge was called Scotland Lodge because it was on the north of the boundary of Draycott Park.
Scotland Lodge still stands on Scotland Hill, the road between Upper Segrie and the A429 to Malmesbury. All these properties bear a crest with shield and a date. Draycott Cern has lots of them, Sutton Benger too, as Reuben says. Take a look next time you pass through the village. These are the homes built for the employees of the Draycott estate, all of which inevitably brings us to the Draycott estate itself and a brief history lesson. The land we know as Draycott Park straddled an area some 610 acres on either side of where the M4 now runs. The park's boundary is marked by walls and five lodges. Around the park was the larger Draycott estate, which comprised to the north both Upper and Lower Segrie villages. To the south, Draycott Cern, Sutton Benger, some of Christian Malford, some of Kington Langley, and much further south, Kellaways. We know that from the 14th century onwards, a medieval manor sits in what we call Draycott Park. It is succeeded by Old Draycott House in the 15th century, which has various wings and frontages added to it over the next 300 years. So far, so good. But then, in the early 1800s, things take a turn for the worse.
Catherine Tilney Long is the eldest daughter of the estate's owner, the 7th Baronet of Draycott, Sir James Tilney Long. On her father's death, the estate passes to Catherine's brother, by all accounts a sickly child, and he dies just before his 11th birthday in 1805. The estate and all her father's investments pass to Catherine, making her the richest commoner in England. She is known as the Wiltshire Heiress. Perhaps unsurprisingly, suitors seeking Catherine's hand in marriage are quickly on the scene. Unfortunately for her and the estate, she chooses poorly. Her new husband, the gambler, adulterer and spendthrift William Wellesley Pole, nephew of the Duke of Wellington, spends much of Catherine's money and allegedly gives her venereal disease. She dies a broken woman at the age of 35.
So this is when the Wellesley family enters the story. Hence Sutton Benger's pub, the Wellesley Arms. The Duke of Wellington was Arthur Wellesley. The house and estate is inherited by Catherine and William's son, the tortuously named William Richard Arthur Pole Tilney Long Wellesley. And then his son, Britain's ambassador to France, Henry Wellesley, who was rewarded for his services with the title Lord Cowley. He retires to live in the house in 1867 until his death 17 years later. In 1920, Lord Cowley's third son, Christian, sells the house, the park and all the land. It then passes through a series of owners until the land is sold in parcels to various farmers in 1946. Tenants are also given the option to buy their homes. At this time, Reuben works on one of the farms tending cattle. But what about the old manor house itself?
And the big house you mentioned, this is Draycott House, isn't it?
Yes.
So, as I understand it, that was demolished in the 1950s?
Yes.
So when you were growing up and you were young, what are your memories of the house from your younger years?
The house was, for a long, long time, a shell. Empty, but intact. All the windows were intact. They weren't here long, but the American serviceman was here in 1944, for instance, and they used the house. Part of the house is billets, And that was a big company because they had a big camp at Langley Borough.
The Second World War changes the park in another way.
And then another thing happened during the war. It was called the War Ag, and that was when land surplus, if you like, was converted to grow crops. So at that stage, a lot of Draycott Park was ploughed up and converted into fields. Because before that, you see, it was just open parkland.
In 1950, the old house is sold to the Bent family. It is demolished by 1955, and much of the masonry used to build a new property, also called Draycott House, which is attached to the farm buildings that were already on the site. In the late 1960s, the route of the soon-to-be-built M4 motorway is published, straight through the middle of Draycott Park.
And what was the reaction, just jumping to when the M4 was built, when it was announced that it was going to go on that route and cut the park in two? What was the feeling in the village at that stage?
Not a great deal. But when it settled down, all houses' prices went up about at least £20,000 because of the commuters. People moved in and easy access to Bath, Bristol, London. That was the main impact when it was completed, sorted out. Then people moved in. It opened in 1975. They had to decide whether they knew that River Raven was ahead of them. So they had to make the decision whether to go up on stilts, like a flyover, or cut in. So they arrived at the River Avon at a lower level so that it would easier, more economical probably, to put up the bridge. Mm-hmm. So they went right through the park. The surface of the M4 is 70 foot below ground level through the park. And when they got down the levels, as you know, first off, soil, stones, brash, and then they come to blue, glummy, glummy clay, and a lot of it. And they was in that clay, they was digging up ammonites as big round as dartboards in perfect condition because it was in the clay. And they pitched that, 90% of that clay is pitched over in the park. It was a valley, it's no longer a valley. It's filled right to the top with glummy, glummy clay.
Which brings us right up to date. By the way, if you call the main road that runs between Kington Langley and Draycott Cern the Draycott Strait, you'd be wrong. As this excerpt from a 1989 interview with Kington Langley villager Nancy Winch tells us.
Like most young girls, I went into domestic service when I was 15. My first job was looking after the children of Farmer Hawkins of Draycott. I lived in and earned 5 shillings a week, with very little free time. Although I was supposed to have every other Sunday and half a day off. However, it didn't matter, as I used to walk up to Kington Langley from Draycott to see my mother with the baby in the pram. I used to walk up New Road. It was never called Draycott Strait in those days. Foreigners called it the Draycott Strait.
As for Reuben, he is a final living link to the bygone era of the Draycott estate.
And unfortunately, last year, a man in Sutton Benger was exactly the same. His grandfather bought the house in Sutton Benger, and we was the last two to actually connect back to the estate.
But even though the estate was sold 100 years ago and gradually broken up, its influence still resonates through our local area, particularly through place names.
We're the Cinderella now.
After
owning the Ho Ching Mang, we're the last in the line. But Going back to the 1920s,
yes,
when the estate was sold, a lot of parcels of land and farms were sold to the council. And later on, they owned it. So what did they do? Built a council estate. And no argument with it. Seagree got one called Broadlees. What was the field called? Broadlees. They got a hall now, New Hall. What's it called? Goscroft Hall. And the people that wanted to build it come to me and said, did I have any idea of the field next door to the allotments? And it triggered me. I thought, hang on, we think we ought to know that. So I looked it up in Europe.
What is that document you've got there, Ruben?
That's the catalogue of the sale in 1920.
Oh, gosh.
And I looked through, and the field, Goscroft Field. So what's it, the hall called? Goscroft Hall.
When I set out to make this podcast, my intention was to focus on Drake at Cern. What I realised is that the hamlet is part of a bigger story. The Draycott estate is long gone. For us today, it's hard to comprehend the influence the estate had on the communities around it. After all, the era of the grand country estate came to an end somewhere between the two world wars. But for Reuben, its last living connection to the estate workers, the memory of Draycott House and its owners, still seems powerful.
It's interesting, just listening to you talk though, you realise how much of the kind of area here today is still sort of defined by the Draycott estate and what
it
was.
Oh yes, very much so. And then yes, that all lies back to that. Of course, everything at that stage went round. They owned it all. So it didn't matter. One house, you didn't get no dispute of boundaries because they owned the...
I hope you've enjoyed this edition about Draycott Cern and the Draycott Estate. I'd like to thank Reuben and Geraldine Cousins. I'd also like to thank Joanna White for her research materials and my daughter, Alexandra Beebe, for her readings. This has been Memories of Kington Langley. Goodbye.